This will be a radio program discussing the Boulder Chicano Community Project with Jesse Velez Lehman, Manuel Arcadia, Pauline Romano, and Regina Vigil.
Boulder Chicano Community Project began in the fall of 1976 when several Boulder residents committed themselves to the development of this project. The project consists of oral histories involving the origin of Mexican-American families who settled in Boulder. The oral histories takes us as far back as the beginning of the 20th century. I will be interviewing three people who are responsible for the realization of the Boulder Chicano Community Project. Each of them will be dealing with different topics as they discover them through the oral histories. These topics range from the quest for survival all the way through to cultural and religious traditions. This program was sponsored by the Colorado Humanities Program and was co-sponsored by three community organizations, Canyon Park Community Center, Migrant Action Program, and the Women's Resource Center. We are talking here with Jesse Velez Lehman, Manuel Arcadia, Regina Vigil. Jesse, how did you get involved in this project?
I got involved in this project through an ad in the Boulder Daily Camera. The Women's Resource Center was asking for volunteers. I was interviewed and I was accepted and attended their sessions in counseling skills. Then I was asked if I wanted to work out of Canyon Park, which is at 2045 Canyon Boulevard, where I really met Regina and Manuel and really got to know them. Some years back, I felt the need of relating and being with Mexican-Americans and had volunteered as a bilingual Spanish translator for another agency that was housed in this very place. So it was familiar. The community was not strange to me. Mexican-American people had voiced a desire to have a place of their own. When I came to Boulder 16 years ago, I felt the impact of isolation. There was not a place in Boulder where you could meet them. I made a conscious effort to attend the Spanish programs at CU that were given by the Spanish department. I never saw any of the old Mexican-Americans at these functions. The campus was totally absent of young American, Spanish-American students. Already then, the unconscious question was there. The Boulder Chicano community, where is it?
And Manuel, how did you become involved in this project?
I was working at the time, and I was also a student for the Migrant Action Program. I was doing community outreach for the program, and in the process, I got involved with the Canyon Park Community Center. The project became important to me because I saw in it the opportunity to convey my feelings pertaining inter-ethnic relations, which was one of the purposes of my outreach work with the community, which was mostly to link the student community with the Chicano Boulder community, an issue that had been in my mind for many years. I saw the Boulder Chicano Community Project as a good medium to foster awareness about the existence of a Chicano community in Boulder. Through this project, I hope to bring out some of the contradictions in our society which help perpetuate alienation and inequality.
And Regina, can you tell us how you became involved?
I was working and am working for the Boulder County Women's Resource Center, working out at Canyon Park where I met Jesse and Manuel. At the time, the Boulder City Council was debating whether or not to relocate Canyon Park Community Center or just to destroy it for the Senior Citizen Center. The question then that we had to deal with was, would the Quonset would be removed? Would the history of the Quonset be removed also? The Quonset was the only place in the city of Boulder where the Mexican-American community had any identification. In 1968, it housed the Economic Opportunity Program. It was the location of activities and workshops for the Migrant Action Program, and the Women's Resource Center had the Survival in the 70s series at the Quonset. The Quonset was a symbol of minority activity, what little there was in the city of Boulder, and most people were unaware of that. For me, then, I was concerned about the loss of Canyon Park Community Center, what it represented, and felt a need to educate the Anglo community of the contributions of Boulder's Chicano community. And thus was born the idea of of a film, and we selected a film as the best possible way to reach people. We wrote a program based on three parts. Since we had no information, or very, very little information about Boulder's Chicano community, we needed to do an oral history project to get that information. So the oral history project was the first part of the project, the film is the second part of the project, and then taking the film around to neighborhoods in the city of Boulder will be the third part of the project.
Jesse?
The number of minority people living in Boulder is a small percentage of the city's population. This project will focus on this group and will tell the story of a few of Boulder's minority community members. Boulder is what it is because of the people who live and work here. One cannot go to the library to get information about the Mexican Americans who came or stayed in Boulder. No written records exist. The citizens of Boulder do not know much, if anything, about the Mexican American community. Chicanos, too, do not know their own history. There are no written records. There are no photographs. There is nothing physically available to the public. But there is this project, and we dedicate this project to Boulder's Chicano community.
Jesse has been talking about the number of Chicanos living in Boulder and that there were no written records about them. Regina, can you tell us why that is so?
There are no written records because most Mexicans did not stay in Boulder as a general rule, but a small number of families did manage to come and survive in the city. Some of these families, remember, we are talking about approximately seven families have been in Boulder for maybe 50 or 60 years. Many of the people who stayed here lived in the Goss Grove neighborhood. Some lived on Water Street, which is today Canyon Boulevard. Water Street was changed in 1962 when the railroad tracks were removed. The street was enlarged and the name was changed to Canyon Boulevard. We researched into the records of Sacred Heart Church and found the baptismal records from the years starting in 1866. In this period, there were approximately seven baptismal records of Spanish surname people living in Boulder, or in Boulder. However, in the next 10 years, there were five times the number of Spanish surname people in Boulder. And each additional 10-year period shows at least a doubling of the baptismal register of Spanish surname people, ending in 1970 with 191 Spanish surname baptismals. Where are these people? Why didn't they stay in Boulder? We know that they were here. One person that we interviewed in the Oral History Project gave her reason. People were not encouraged to stay in Boulder. In fact, they were discouraged. This woman came to Boulder in the early 1940s. She came to Boulder from Erie, which is also in Boulder County. She came to Boulder for employment. She worked as an interpreter. The police department needed someone to interpret for their Spanish people, and she acted as an interpreter for the police department and eventually for the welfare department. She notes that the only help given to Mexican families by the welfare department was bus fare to leave the county. So based on the information from this woman, her experiences from the Oral History Project, we learned that Mexicans did come to Boulder, but they did not remain in the city.
Manuel, why did Mexicans come to this area in the first place?
Well, I suppose they were, as is the usual trend, looking for work. This area offered at the time the opportunities for work because of the development that Boulder County was going under, such as the university, for example, which must have brought a lot of workers for construction. Also mining and agriculture had a great deal to do with Mexican people coming over here, which they did from Mexico or from other areas such as New Mexico and adjacent states to Colorado. People mostly came from Mexico at the time when we are putting these oral histories into perspective during the Mexican Revolution, which is when migration from Mexico took place in great numbers as a result of the conditions in Mexico and the what was happening internally. People left and thus came to the United States, usually, like I said, looking just for work and for an opportunity to survive. As a result of that, a lot of them never went back to Mexico and stayed in towns such as Boulder.
Jesse, I understand that people also came here from New Mexico. Can you tell us about that?
Well, as Manuel said, during the Revolution, many people came here. And it's always been a reality that people move because of necessity. They came here to escape the Revolution, to escape death, war, poverty. Economics change and people are forced to change also. Through the oral histories, we hear people telling us of their ways in New Mexico. There were whole towns and ranches where only Spanish was spoken. They had many practical survival skills that they've carried with them everywhere they have moved. Their system of bartering, owning large ranches, some of them, some only owned small plots of land, but everyone seemed to help each other to maintain their families. They planted together, they harvested together, they bartered, they butchered, they did a lot of handcrafts of their own, clothing they used, utensils they used in their homes, everyday useful things. They cured meat, they canned food, they planted gardens together, they put food in cool earthen cellars, and they had many medicinal herbs, names of herbs for all kinds of remedies. They had their curanderos and their curanderas. They had the midwives, la partera. La bruja was very real, the witch, who could perform black or white magic. Their music was something they carried everywhere with them. They used it not only for entertainment, but they used it also for getting money for their needs. They played at weddings, at baptisms, at birthdays, and sometimes they did it only for fun or they did it during a good harvest. So English was not something that was needed too much at this time. Their ways seemed eternal. Industrialization soon came knocking at their door, and their ways had to go in face of reality for survival, and they were on the move. They moved to the San Luis Valley, where they took jobs such as farm labor that they were used to. They knew about it. They also tended sheep. They were very good at it. It was something that people told me was something cheaper to do, to tend sheep than to have cattle. They did all kinds of jobs, anything they could do. And when these became obsolete, they came still further north. They came to work in the coal mines. They came to Boulder and Erie and Longmont. And since miners only worked in the winter time, in the summer it was a problem. But they stayed, some of them stayed, and they worked in anything they could do. Barbering, working in small restaurants, cleaning. They worked in boarding houses, railroad sections, and lumber mills, and sugar beet mill refineries. As garbage collectors and carpenters, they build roads and tunnels through the mountains. Train loads, they tell me, of several families contracted by sugar beet companies came from the valley to work in the fields when employment got scarce there. And as they moved, they brought with them their practical survival skills so that when the question of depression came up, most people felt very fortunate. They suffered no hunger, really. Perhaps just a little cold.
Regina, beyond the reason for employment opportunities, have you discovered any other reasons why people came to the Boulder area?
Another reason that people came to Boulder was for educational opportunities for their children. This was a big concern of most of the people that we interviewed. Boulder has a Catholic school, Mount St. Gertrude. Children could go there and get a Catholic education. Not all families wanted Catholic education for their children, but they wanted a good education for their children. One woman had 10 children, and she worked at Mount St. Gertrude's to help defer the tuition cost. One of the things that came out in this was that children got a better education in Boulder, but they also sacrificed their language and culture, and often had to give up the language. The parents were separated from the rest of the community. They were isolated from the rest of Boulder. We are hearing in the oral histories that now, only now, people are reflecting on what they gave up in order for their children to have a better education.
Missy, I'm still really not clear, though, why people who traveled here did not stay in Boulder. Why do you think some people did not?
Well, we always seem to come back to the question of survival. One thing we noticed was that families didn't remain here, as a general rule. As the pattern went with in other places, families would come and establish themselves, and other members would come also later. But not here in Boulder. I don't propose to have the answer, but only describe what I have seen and heard from some that did stay in Boulder. I got the impression they wanted a home for their children. Although staying here isolated them from their families and other Mexican Americans, this was a town where there were very few Mexicans, and this was a way of making yourself very inconspicuous. Most called themselves Hispanos from New Mexico, which gave them a European flavor, rather than south of the border. Many more than not are very fair and could easily pass into the dominant society in this town, and it would be easier for their children to assimilate at a more rapid pace. They worked hard and were frugal. They saved their money and they bought homes. The love they had for their children has at times proved costly. Some learned to speak English well and made it in the dominant society outside their home. But inside of their home, they held on tenaciously to their culture as much as they were able.
The thing that comes up consistently in the oral histories is the importance of language and the sorrow expressed by many, many of the people that we interviewed that their grandchildren do not speak Spanish.
Language is playing an important role in regard to cultural identity. People now want their children to know Spanish. 40 years ago, the older generation could not afford to be picky. To have a language and culture of your own was a luxury they really couldn't keep and survive.
Jesse, what do you mean they couldn't afford to be picky?
They really had no choice when the survival of their children was at stake. While they were the backbone of this country in the field as laborers, miners, and whatever other unskilled jobs they did, English was not very necessary. But as the trends of industrialization raced on and rumors of the Second World War were upon them, the desire for a stable place and perhaps for a skilled or semi-skilled profession became more of a reality. They saw the necessity for learning English in order to live and relate to the Anglo society in which they lived. They knew that if they stuck to their own culture and language, their children would suffer.
And the price of giving up the language had to have an impact on one's identity. One person interviewed discussed her feeling of being different and not knowing why. It was not until, as an adult, she left Boulder, lived in a Chicano community in another part of Colorado, and began to feel comfortable. If the dominant culture puts down speaking Spanish in the schools, for instance, but the parents speak Spanish in the home, for the child something is wrong. But what is it? What does this situation do to people's concept of self?
The impact was tremendous. Through the oral histories of Boulder, we gathered people became isolated from their families, from their culture, and from their language. It seemed that as long as Mexican-American people were living in towns and mining communities and ranches, working as laborers or living in barrios or colonias, and only Spanish was spoken, the family stayed pretty much intact.
Virginia, do you have anything else to add to that?
One of the things that came out was, for me, that if the dominant culture puts down speaking Spanish in the schools, for instance, but the parents speak Spanish in the home, this must be an incredibly difficult and confusing situation, let's say to a young kindergarten child. If he speaks Spanish in the schools and is punished, And yet he's supposed to go home and he's supposed to speak Spanish to his parents. The question of who am I and what am I is raised and leads to a negative self-image. The dominant culture has stereotyped much of the Chicano behavior without understanding the reasons why, many of the reasons which were survival reasons and reflect cultural differences.
This happened to me. I went in as Jesusa to school and came out as Jesse. It was difficult for people to pronounce your name, so it was easier just to call you a different name or to translate it. They made fun of my name to begin with. They called me Jesus. They would not pronounce it in Spanish. And so naturally it made me feel very bad. But when they renamed me again, I really didn't protest that much because the kidding stopped and teasing, and when you're little, it really makes an impact on you. No one else had ever made fun of my name at home or on my friends. And suddenly to happen, for this to happen to you, it is pretty traumatic to a little child.
Jesse, we've been mentioning the first generation people and how they didn't have many choices, and also giving examples of what happened in the schools and the effect on self-identity. How did these changes impact the family?
Well, after it became imperative to move, and most families did, because of employment or educational purposes or whatever, I think the family was truly confronted by culture shock. They left behind them their main support group, which is the extended family, and it includes your family, your relatives, your compadres, your friends. Already, there was a loss of your cultural background. The family is la visita, the visit, loose and relaxed, which may be obsolete in many instances now. And now it's replaced by la cita, the appointment, which is confined and timed. The obvious, like food, was different, and some people were ashamed of it. Your music, perhaps, too loud. Your language, it was already a handicap. But the psychological impact was the most damaging, like the way you felt and did things. You were taught almost reverence for your parents, not because they were perfect, but rather because it was something they had earned, los viejos, through their living and caring and their struggles. The care and concern for your younger brothers was taught very early in your life. You were very protected to them. Those who attended school, always they stressed the importance of learning, not to compete, but to learn. If you were especially academically gifted, you had the greater responsibility to care for your people. You were taught to admire and not to envy. Women, mothers, never really knew what was really happening on the outside world, if they were in the home, and most of them were, unless their children complained. And most children were taught not to complain. It was an underlying thing that you just didn't complain, you did the best you could. Women played a very important role in that they transmitted the culture, because they were usually the last to learn English if they were in the home. Their husbands went to work, and usually they were the sole breadwinners. And since his culture demanded he be a macho, he may not have said much about what happened to him outside of the home. So there was sometimes little relation about what was going on with the wife and the husband and the children. So each one almost had a battle of their own. And if you happened to meet together, that's why it's so nice to have the extended family, that if you can't talk to your mother or your father, you would talk to your cousins or your aunt or your grandparents about what was happening to you. The family was the backbone of the support, all these people that were members of your family. I think that English didn't rob the family of their culture or identity, but it was the climate in which it was taught. Some of our children, and too many of them, I think, emerged with a very poor image of himself. All that had been dear to you, somehow subtly, you were told in school that it was not very desirable. the children were caught in two different worlds, two different cultures, and they suffered very much. I think that's why they hated school. They hated to go to school, because they were taught two different things. But I think the remnants of our culture is still there. The awareness is back among the young. They want to revive what has been lost. There is much there, and I think that they are very hardy and will pick it up again. Fear is another thing that has been apparent in the oral histories. Fear of repercussions from such topics as would be offensive to Anglos. Fear of deportation, fear of not being taken serious. Sometimes you feel like nobody listens. What was said at times on the tapes was very much with caution. And sometimes they would tell you these fears only when the tape was not going. They never talked too much about discrimination. They tried somehow rather to avoid the subject on the tape. They feared public places, especially if they didn't speak English at all. So they had very little communication with their community outside of their home.
Fear is a definite reality that people have to deal with, and it came out in the tapes. People being afraid to speak because of what might happen to them. People being aware of the fact that on the eve of the Great Depression in 1927, mass deportation to Mexico of several hundred thousand Mexicans occurred, many of whom were American-born United States citizens.
That continues to happen. Deportations in 1977, for example, reached the number of 800,000, which were sent back to Mexico. That gives us an average of about 80,000 per month. So the reason for fear, it's a very real thing that Mexican-American people have to face, and it seems to linger on because of the methods used and the conditions under which people are forced to come up here, and then they're forced to go back.
Thank you. The Boulder Chicana Community Project was born as a result of the drive of several Boulder City residents to bring out the presence of some of the original Mexican-American families in the city of Boulder. Manuel Arcadia, Regina Vigil, and Jesse Velez-Lehman joined efforts to find directly from the families their experiences in surviving physically and culturally within the white Anglo-Saxon majority culture. After almost 2 years of research, the project culminated in producing a series of oral histories. Through these oral histories, the original Mexican-American families in Boulder experienced their views pertaining to their economic and cultural and political struggles in the city of Boulder for the past 60 years.
This has been a tape based on the findings of the Boulder Chicano Community Project. It will be developed later into a radio program to be played on KGNU in Boulder called Voz Latinos.